Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Dalet, and we're holding on the bottom of Lamed Beis, Amud Beis, six lines from the bottom. So the next thing that we had in the Mishnah was the statement that when it comes to Divrei Mamonut, so then anybody and everybody gets what to say. That's what it seems to be saying. So hakol melamdim zechut v'chova when it comes to dinei mamonot, whereas when it comes to dinei nefashot, only hakol melamdim zechut, people are able to give good reasons. And who are these people? Not clear. Are able to give good reasons for dismissing the charges against him, but we don't listen to people who are arguing for his conviction. When you say everybody, what does that mean? People walking from the streets? Or the people that are involved in the din, would that include even the witnesses? That the witnesses are able to put forth arguments about it? So does that mean, ask the Gemara, Hakol v'afilu edim? If it means everybody involved in the case, and that would include even the witnesses, it would mean that our Mishnah would only be going according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, and would not be going according to the majority opinion of the Chachamim who argue on him, the Tanya. The aid echad lo ya'ane banefesh. So let's understand that pasuk. Kol make nefesh lefi edim yirtzach et harotzeach. The aid echad lo ya'ane banefesh lamut. I mean, we've heard that in so many different psukim. That aid echad lo ya'ane banefesh. What in the world is the pasuk throwing it in here as a throwaway line with the din of the halacha of ritzicha on misa? So we have a machlokas, what that meaning is. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says that the Tanakhama says, I haven't said yet, lo yaneh ben efesh, what that means is cannot put forward arguments, not the edus itself. That's a given from many other psukim. Here it's adding that an aid should have nothing at all to say about the case. And if afterwards he wants to offer an opinion, he's not called up to offer his opinion. And that doesn't matter whether the opinion was l'schut or l'chova, meaning is it against the reason why his testimony is not really meant to be mechayev the accused, or even if it's a good reason why we ought to prosecute the accused. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Aimer, not so. He can be one l'schut ve'ein one l'chova. He can't argue against the person, but he could certainly say something which would be a reason for us to dismiss the charges against this person. So, is it really the case that our mission is going against the Das HaRabim and it's paskening like Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda and it's allowing the witnesses to open up their mouths and have arguments with the discussion in the courtroom? Omer of Papa, no, of course not. It's talking about Echad min HaTalmidim. Obviously, it doesn't mean the courtroom opens up its door to anybody who has something to say on the matter. Of course, you're right. It means people that are involved in the din. But remember, people involved in the din include not only the witnesses, besides the obvious judges and so on, but it means one of the Talmidim that is sitting in front of those judges. So remember, we've got these three rows in front of the judges. And there, we're saying, if he has something to say that is going to be, whether it's detrimental or whether it's useful, in dine momenes, we will listen to what he's got to say one way or the other. But when it comes to dine nefashot, we only allow reasons that would persuade us because of hitzilu ha'eda, reasons that would persuade us to give the guy a break. So it's talking about the Divrei HaKol. And what would be actually the basis of the machlokas between Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan? So Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says, well, you brought the pasuk and you left out the last word. I mean, that's pretty sneaky. It doesn't say Eid Echad Lo Ya'aneh B'Nefesh. It says Eid Echad Lo Ya'aneh B'Nefesh Lamut, which means that he cannot offer an opinion that would maybe bring about this person's death. But the porter is specifically saying that that's the only limitation. If it's a question of l'schut, he could figure out why we should acquit this defendant. Of course he can speak. And the Rabbanan, Omresh Lakish, the Rabbanan say, look, this is a din that is innate in the concept of testimony, as we're going to see later on. A witness, and that is in any way nogea be'eduto. So if he is not impartial, he's not a witness. By definition, this guy that seems to be talking for against his own testimony, we don't believe him because we're afraid that he's pulling back. Remember, he's in a little bit of a pickle. He already opened his mouth, and he claims to have seen the murder and that this guy is chayev. How about if he's getting nervous that he's going to be caught as an aid zomeh? He's no way that he can simply go and fess up to the court and say, actually, I didn't really see, you know, make something out of it that would make his edus batel. Why? Because we have a klal, kivan shehigid, shuv eino chuzer umagid. You cannot say anything. Once your testimony was accepted in Beis Din, it's after kidei dibur, then to say another word that would in any way affect what it was that you said previously is not accepted. So what does he do when he starts getting nervous? He presents arguments to let the defendant go, so at least that way there will never be a psak din against the defendant. And even if his lies are discovered, he's not going to be responsible because the court never decided to actually have the gemar din. So therefore, by definition, we can't accept anything that he's saying because he is obviously getting involved for other reasons. So we don't need a raya from the pasuk. Okay, so, I mean, what do you do with the pasuk? The Rabbanan have the first part of the pasuk that lo yaneh b'nefesh at all, and then how are they going to explain the fact that the pasuk itself limits the din of lo yaneh b'nefesh to dafka, a case where it would be to his detriment? It would be lamut. So how do they explain that if they hold it's even l'schut? Ah, that, they say, is referring to the Talmidim. In other words, take a look at this bright. Amar achad mina edim. If one of the witnesses has an argument in favor of the defendant, how do we know? It says in the pasuk that we don't listen to him because it says, Eid echad lo yana, period. And minayin lech abin atalmidim shamar, yesh li lalameda lav chova, minayin she'en shomim lo. And how do we know that even if one of the people sitting in front of the court, who are obviously not nogea b'dover, they want to say something that would lead to his conviction? How do we know that we don't listen to that either? Just read, Echad lo yaneh b'nefesh lamut. Just a person should have no opinion about whether this person should die that could be accepted by the court. So that's referring to others. But for the witness himself, it's clear anyway that we're not going to allow him to speak, even the schut. Now, the Mishnah goes on to say that there's also another difference between dini mamonos and dini nefashos, namely, that in the case of dini nefashos, so if you originally were a dayan, and you were actually giving reasons why we should convict this person, find him chayev lamut, he can change his mind, and he can say, I realized that I was mistaken, and that actually he's potter. But if you originally said he's potter, you can't start bringing rayas that he's chayev. Omar Rav, obviously, says Rav, this is only during the discussions that the judges are having. So we're talking about over here, in the court deliberations, you can't provide reasons to explain to the other dayanim why they should paskin in favor of his chiyuv. But obviously you don't lie about what your opinion is when you're called to give the psak din. Of course you do say exactly what you believe, and you give the psak din. The only thing that the Mishnah said was, hamilamed chova, right, or hamilamed zechut, Melamedni, so you're teaching others, and you're trying to explain why the others should go along with your opinion. So if you had already argued that he's putter, you cannot start being the one who is explaining to everyone why they should say he's chayev. That's part of the Yitzilu Eida, but it has nothing to do with the psak of the Besdin. When we now come to the vote, you have to say what you hold, of course. The fact that you originally had argued to acquit him doesn't mean that now you don't say, I believe that we need to be Mekayeva. Says the Gemara, but then if that's the case, the Mishnah later on doesn't make any sense. Take a look at the Mishnah later on, which is a continuation of our own Mishnah. Lemochorat, the next day, Mashkimim Ubakim. So remember, our Mishnah said, you have to let it sit overnight and think it over. The next morning, early in the morning, your Mashkimim come to the court. We're talking about the Dayanim. And now, each one states his opinion. Okay, that sounds like we're coming to the verdict, right? That's when we give the verdict. We give the verdict the next morning. And even so, look what it says. Hamizakeh, someone who had originally argued that he's potter, he says, Ani Hamizakeh, Umizakeh Ani Bimkomi. That was my opinion, and I stand by my opinion. The one who is Mechayev says, Ani Hamechayev, and I stand by my opinion. If he wants to change his mind, and he was a Melamed Chovah, he can now be Melamed Schuz. But if his original opinion was for Schuz, Eino Yochol Lachzor Melamed Chovah. Rav said that the next morning, when it comes to the verdict, that of course you have to say what your actual opinion is now. I mean, that was the whole point, wasn't it? V'hala Bochorat, I mean, that Mishnah is talking about the next day. The next day is the day of the Gemar Din, when you're supposed to come to a vote. And nonetheless, it says you cannot change your mind if it's in the direction of Chovah. Oh, come on, says the Gemara. I mean, what do you think happens the next day? You've been thinking about it all night long, right? That was the whole point. So the next day, you're supposed to walk in and say, I have defined, or the next day you present your new thoughts, and the other judges present their new thoughts, no? I mean, you're telling me there's no discussion? All we do is we sit down, no further deliberations, but I've been thinking all night, I've got a lot of, no, sorry, you just have to give your opinion. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, l'machorat masau matan mileka, there's no further deliberations in the Besdin, and the next day, of course there are. So what the Mishnah was talking about is when we open up in the beginning of the morning, we open up the further deliberations, and then later on, Rav was saying, when we finally get to the end of those deliberations, now it's time to give your opinion in terms of the psak, that of course at that point you give your opinion, b'shas ha-adin, you give your opinion, what is chayev, whether you said so before or not, ki katani b'shat masa umatan. The Mishnah was talking about during that period of the further deliberations on the second morning. Okay, but still, there's another part of that Mishnah that seems to go against Rav. Take a look at the next thing. So, Danim Elu Kineged Elu, Ach Yirechad HaMinach Nechayvim, Ivrei HaMizakim. It says over there that if we had a problem, we had to keep adding dayanim, because one dayan said, I don't know. So we got all the way up to the maximum. The maximum was that what was originally a court of 23 now becomes a court of 71, because we had to keep adding these dayanim. So in that case, where we have 36 that are mechayev and 35 that are potrim, we only have a majority of one. And remember, we cannot paskin a chiev with a majority of one. So what exactly do we do? So it says over there, well, we keep arguing until we finally get to a point. We don't allow a bezdin to walk out as a hanged bezdin. That's a bizoyan. And we keep working at it until finally one of the people who was mechayev actually realizes that he should be mezakeh, which gives us a majority in favor of ptur, and with the majority of one in favor of acquittal, then we acquit, right? Now, if Rav is right, why did the Mishnah say only until we find a majority in favor of acquittal? It should say, or we find a majority of two, which would possibly be three, in favor of being mechayev him. Because according to Rav, you can change your mind and say that you're chayev. Well, come on, of course you could change your mind. The Mishnah is only trying to say we keep arguing until we reach a decision. So what, it's going to talk about a decision to be mechayev the person? We give you the example that we prefer. The Tana is looking to find that the person is putter, not that the person is chayev. So the Tana azechutka mahadar. He's trying to figure out how to get the guy off the hook. Achova loka mahadar. He's not trying to get the guy killed. Oh, okay. But I have a raya in a brisa against Rav. Listen to this. Toshma, the Omar Rebbe Yossi b'Rebbe Chanina. If one of the Talmidim had said, I feel that we should be mezakehim. So, okay, if one of the Talmidim say that, we bring the Talmid up, he becomes part now of the diyun. And what happened was, after arguing for why this person should be putter, he dies. Ro'ino tokil chai v'omed b'makomo. When it comes time for the actual psak din, and now the judge, he wasn't one of the judges originally, but it would be the same din if he was a judge originally. So then we count his vote in favor of acquittal. Ro'ino tokil chai v'omed b'makomo. Now, if you're telling me, according to Rav, that just because a person once argued in the courtroom for this person's acquittal does not mean that now he can't change his mind and he can decide that we should actually convict him. So why should we say just because initially he was giving over all of these good arguments for acquittal, therefore we should keep him as if he's still alive and he's still arguing for acquittal? Maybe he would have changed his mind. He wasn't given the opportunity because he died before we got to the moment that we were paskening. Why not say, look, who knows? If he were currently alive, he might have been paskening in the other direction. Yeah, but I mean, why would we think that if there were no indications of it? That doesn't bother me. I mean, we're not going to just pick something out of the thin air and say, even though he's been arguing the whole time forcefully for acquitting this guy, he must have changed his mind now, or he might have changed his mind now. What for? We know that he argued in that direction, and meanwhile, it gives us an opportunity to get another vote in favor of the guy's acquittal, which is Hakim of Itzilaida. But wait a minute. There was this tshuva that they sent from Eretz Yisrael, and it said, L'divrei Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, according to what Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina just said, namely, that we will consider that individual as if he's still alive, the implications of Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina is that it excludes our own Rebbe's pshat. Mutsa michlar Rabbeinu, our own Rebbe being Rav. And that seems to say that don't try to fit it in. It's true that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina is definitely making Rav, I mean, unless he wants to specifically argue on the Tana, that he would not be correct, and the person is not able to change his mind. Gentlemen, that's not what the letter said. It said in the letter, Ein Mutsa Itmar. Don't think that just because this is what Rabbi Yossi Berchanina said, that we consider the guy to still be around and offering his opinion that he's putter, don't think that that means that it in any way contradicts Rav. That's what it said. Exactly the opposite. Okay, I have another mission. This is the mission later. And it says, Shnei Sofrei Adayanim Omdim Lefnehem. There were two secretaries that would be sitting there, Echad ben Hayamin, Echad ben Hasmol, Kotvim Divrei HaMezakim, B'Divrei HaMechayvim. So what we have over here is right in front of the court, we've got these two secretaries that are writing down the opinions of each of these judges, whether it was for Zechut or whether it was for Chiyuv. Now, I understand why it's necessary to write down the Divrei HaMechayvim. Why? Because suppose the next day, those same Dayanim will continue to argue, but they will argue from a different basis. Now, remember that we have a din that you're supposed to wait overnight so that you can weigh things properly. As we say in English, sleep on it. That comes from this Mishnah. You have to sleep on it. Now, if you offer the next morning after sleeping on it, you offer a new approach. Maybe you believe the same thing. You're still a divrei mechayvim, but now you believe that you're chayev, you bring a raya from a different pasuk, or a raya from a different mishnah, right? Well, then you're going to have to sleep on that. So we're not going to be able to give a verdict today. Because if you're offering new ideas, then the chiyav is to wait overnight for those new ideas, and everybody's going to have to sleep on it. So it's very important for us to be able to have access to precisely what you said the day before, and not that you should just walk in and say, well, yesterday I said you're chiyav, today I say you're chiyav as well, and I believe you're chiyav because of why. But yesterday you said, as it says in the records here, it was because of X. Now, if it's Y, then we can't take a vote. We're going to have to wait till tomorrow. That's very important. So because of that, we are mechuyev to wait till the next morning before we could take it to a vote. So I understand why it's necessary for us to have a record of the opinion. But why do we need to have these secretaries writing down the divrei hamizakim? For what reason? I mean, is it not because if they try to argue on the morrow, they try to argue that he is chayev, we are not going to listen to them? So, because what other purpose would there be for writing it down? If you are telling me that you cannot change your mind, and you can't, even at the time that you're coming now to be literally socked in. We're at the moment of the verdict. Okay, so I understand why I need to know if you're said so before that it's one thing, you're not able to change your mind. If I didn't have any kind of secretary, so what if the guy forgets and overnight he said that it would be, I made a mistake, and if what I had said before, remember we said, that if you make a mistake in something that the tzedukim are made in by, then you can change your mind. All right, so now, if the guy believes that that was the case, and that he had made a mistake in a davar shat tzedukim are made in by, and therefore what I said yesterday had absolutely no real reliable basis in the halacha, so then he could come today, and he can actually be able to change his mind and be mechayev. So therefore, we need to be able to look up what he said the day before. And if he turns up and says, gentlemen, I made a mistake yesterday when I was thinking that you're chayev. It was the kind of mistake that I'm embarrassed to admit. Even the tzedukim would have said was a mistake. And today I'm voting that actually I want to be mechayev this guy. And I thought that he would be putter. He's able to do that. But if we look up his opinion and we say, excuse me, sir, but we're reading your opinion from yesterday in favor of acquitting this guy, and it makes perfectly good sense. Why in the world would you say that this is a mistake that the tzedukim were made in? But no tzedukim would be made to this. Then he won't be able to change his mind. But according to Rav, he could change his mind anyway, because we always say that when it comes to the final vote, that you just say what you believe at that point. That has nothing to do with your original arguments. So is that not the only reason why we write this down? It must be because the chazutai machrin lechova lo mashgichinan bu. Even if now he is arguing that he's right to change his mind, we're not going to listen to him. No, no, no. No, not at all. Rav is 100% correct. The guy is going to be able to say whatever he wants, and it doesn't matter whether it runs against what he had said yesterday or not. That's not the point. The point is, kidei shelo yomru shnayim tam echad mishnei mikraot. The reason that we need to have a record of everybody's opinion is because we want to avoid errors. And how do we avoid errors? Well, if we analyze the reasoning of each one of these dayanim, and it turns out that one dayan is saying the reason that he's putter is because the halacha is, and he brings some very fascinating din that allows him to be putter in this case, some nuance of the halacha, and he says, I want to prove this chiddush of mine from the following pasuk, from the following Mishnah. All right, so he brings the same. Here we're talking about the Pusuk specifically, as we'll see. And he tells us that reason. We write it down. Another judge comes in and fascinatingly had the same revelation overnight, in which he recognizes that there's the same nuance, but he brings a different proof to that nuance. So he brings a different basis from a pasuk to the same nuance of din that the other judge said. So you know what? One of them is wrong. Why is one of them wrong? Because two psukim never say the same thing. The Torah doesn't waste two psukim for the same halacha. And therefore, one of these guys who is basing his entire opinion on a diuk and a pasuk, which is repeated in a different pasuk, according to the other diuk, one of them is wrong. And that pasuk is coming for something else. So we cannot count those two opinions as two opinions. They're only one opinion. If we don't have a precise record of what the source was of the person's arguments, we're going to make a mistake. And it's very easy. Wow, what a big chiddush. That's wonderful. And we'll think it's the same idea that we had heard from judge number 14. You know, and this was like hours ago. We'll think it's the same thing. Therefore, we need to take a look at the secretary's recordings. So it's in order, Kadesh lo yomru, two judges, shnayim tam achad mishnei mikraot, because Rabbi Asi actually asked Rabbi Yochanan, what would be the din if you have two judges saying this nuanced halacha that was based on two different psukim? Do they count as one vote or do they count as two votes? Omar le, they can only count as one vote. Where does that come from? Why would they only come as one vote? Minanimile. Because it says in the Pasuk, this is a very cute Gemara, because it's sort of self-referential. So Abaya says, the reason that we'll only count a Pasuk as one when it comes from two Pasuk, a Tam as one when it comes from two different Pasukim, is because it says in the Pasuk, Achat tiber Elohim, shtayim zo shamati. He owes Lelohim. Kodesh Baruch Hu can say one thing, and we can derive from it two things, or three things, or a million things, because the power of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's ability to put all of the information in a way that we would be able to decode over time in so many different ways is infinite. So what does that tell me? Mikra echad yotzei lekama ta'amim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could put all of that information locked into one pasuk, which as you gradually parse it, and that's what our mesechtas do. They take the pasuk and they beat it and they crush it and they open it until our minds are capable of seeing all of the implications. But ein tam echad yotzei mikam mikraot, the whole point is the oz l'Elohim is the density of information. But it'll never be the other way around. They just stomp throwing around throwaway lines. That's the reason. Devei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, there's another pasuk that says that. Okay, so it sounds like we've got exactly the case. Of course, these are psukim from different places in Nach, and therefore this is not really, but it's fascinating, no? So Devei Rabbi Shmuel says, no, you know how we learn that? It says, Uchepatish yifotzeit salah. It's like the kind of a hammer, this is the way Tosus understands it, that is shattered, that hammer is shattered by the rock. So just like patish zeh, mitchalek l'kamanit zotzot. So as you're banging on this indestructible rock, you've got these sparks that are coming out of the hammer, and when it shatters into a lot of little pieces. Af mikra echod yotzei l'kamat ha'amim. That teaches us that you can get a lot of information out of one of these psukim, and not the other way around. Okay, whatever the moker is, we take for granted, obviously it's a sfora, but ultimately, says Rabbi Yochanan, it's quite clear that one of these opinions are mistaken. All right, so I'd like to see this. Can you give me an example of a case where you have two opinions about this nuanced halacha, and they bring two different psukim? Sure, says the Gemara. Amar Zvin, I'll bring your case. Take a look at this Mishnah in Zvachim. Mizbeach mekadesh et ha-ra'uilo. So, even if what you're bringing up on the Mizbeach is pasul, we've had this halacha many times, as long as it was roi originally from the Mizbeach, meaning that it already had Kedushas Haguv, and it was something that wasn't nifsal from before, but that it wasn't even shayach to Kedushas Haguv, it had, let's say, a mum or whatever, but as long as once it had that Kedusha, and then something happened to it, maybe what you did was, you had a machsheves pigo, you know, maybe some of the dam spilled, I don't know, but whatever psul happens afterwards, that is not going to have an effect on it once it's put on the Mizbeach. We're not going to take it off for the Mizbeach if it was once roi l'Mizbeach. Fine. Now that's a tremendous chiddush. And the question is, where does it come from? So Rabbi Yoshua says, basically, it's a pasuk. Kol ha-ra'ui li-yishim, anything that could have once been put on those fires on the Mizbeach, im ala lo yered. Once it goes up, don't take it down. Where do we see that from? Shenemar hi ha'ola al mokda. What is that coming to tell me? Ola al mokda. That's telling me that this is something that was once on the moked. Ma ola. The ola, it was ra'ui li-yishim, right? By definition, it was shechted, was ready. And it says, al mokda, leave it on that fire. Do not take it off of the Mizbeach. And imal ta lo tered, it's a kosher ola. Do we take it off of the Mizbeach? Of course not. That's what the pasuk is saying. Let it burn all night long until it's completely consumed. So too, anything that is ro'i, it's on that mokade, it shall never be taken off. And therefore, im ala lo yered. That's the mukar. As far as I see it, says Rabbi Yoshua, the key word is mokda kol ha'layla. Once it's on the mokade, it stays there. Rabbi Gamliel says, I'll tell you where I learned this halacha from. Kol ha'ra'ui l'mizbeach im ala lo yered is from the next words. Anything that's gone to the Mizbeach is not taken off of the Mizbeach because it says, hi ha'ola mokda al ha'mizbeach ma'ola. She ruyala gabe Mizbeach, stays on the Mizbeach, not because it says al mokda, but because it says al Mizbeach. Obviously, al Mizbeach, for God's sakes, that's what we've been talking about. So what are you telling me, al Mizbeach? Al Mizbeach means leave it on the Mizbeach, come hell or high water. So therefore, anything that teaches us, kol shuro il Mizbeach, im ala lo yered. So here we've got two different words in the same pasuk. Rabbi Yoshua is learning from the word mokda, that im ala lo yered, and Rabbi Gamliel is learning from the word ala mizbeach, im ala lo yered. Well, one of these is wrong. Both of those words did not come to tell me the same thing. That's ridiculous. There's a great example. Because what's the bottom line? Tarvayu maiko marbe. What are they both saying? That we're marbe psulim, anything that became pasul afterwards, after it was already roi, so it's psulei bakodesh, as that's called. And one is learning it from one word, mi bogda, and one, Rabbi Gamliel, is learning it from the other word, mi mizbeach. That's what we mean. What are you talking about? Oh, it's a miflag plige. That's not the same thing. They're actually at each other's throats. They are arguing. It means completely different things, according to Rabbi Gamliel, according to Rabbi Yoshua. Because the Mishnah itself, and you forget the end of the Mishnah itself says, and what is the difference? Ein bein divrei Rabbi Gamliel adivrei Rabbi Yoshua, ela hadam v'anisachim. If one is learning it from the fire, and one is learning it from the Mizbeach, you think there's no difference? Do we put the liquids that are poured on the Mizbeach for the Nisachim? We pour the wine on the fire? We pour the oil on the fire? No. So, therefore, there are things that are not put on the fire, but they're put on the Mizbeach. And what about the blood? Do we put the blood in the fire? No, we put the blood on the Mizbeach, on the side of the Mizbeach, on the Karnota Mizbeach. We certainly don't put it on the Mogda. So it makes a tremendous nafkamina. What would be the din of Im Ola Yered in things that were pasul in the Dam or in the Nesachim? So according to Rabbi Gamliel, who says, well, it's Roi L'Mizbeach. Ala Mizbeach, leave it on the Mizbeach. But according to Rabbi Yoshua, who says, Mogda, it has to be roi for the Ishim, and it stays on the Ishim, these things are never put on the Ishim. So according to Rabbi Yoshua, Yerdus. What are you trying to tell me? That both of these people are learning the same thing from the same Pasuk? For heaven's sakes, they are Bedavka, not learning the same thing whatsoever. I'm asking you for an example of a nuanced halacha that is learned from two different words. This is not the same halacha. Okay, I'll bring you a different example. Says Rav Papa, Kiratanya, how about this? Rabbi Yossi Haglili Omer, Mitoch Shenemar Kol HaNogea B'Mizbeach Yigdash. It says in the Pasuk, if something touches the Mizbeach, it then becomes holy. So I would have thought that that means Shomea Ni Bein Ra'ui Bein She'no Ra'ui. It doesn't say over here anything about Moked, anything about Mizbeach. It seems to be saying that anything at all that is put on that Mizbeach does not ever leave that Mizbeach. So what if I put on Dvash? It says preferish in the Pasuk, no, kol sar v'chol dvash. What if I put on sar? What if I take a deer? I shech the deer and I put a deer on the Mizbeach. The Torah never talked about deer, it's only talked about the Behemah. So would that also be left on the Mizbeach? And that would be called, once it's Nogea ben Mizbeach Yigdash? That's why the very next Pasuk says, V'zeh asher ta'aseh la Mizbeach, kvasim b'nei shana shnayim layom tamid. What's the connection between Kol HaMizbeach Nogea ben Mizbeach Yigdash and zeh asher ta'aseh la Mizbeach? It means just like kvasim, a ru'uyim for the Mizbeach, Af kol ra'ui, only those things that are roi on the Mizbeach, those are left on the Mizbeach. Rabbi Akiva says, the pasuk that is important here is that closing pasuk that says, Olat tamid asuya, that pasuk is where we learn it from. Ma ola ru'uya, just like the ola is meant to be on the Mizbeach, only things like that, but certainly not Sa'or and Vash and Chayot and so on. So, what's the bottom line? Rabbi Yossi Haglili and Rabbi Akiva are learning the same thing, aren't they? That Psulim, or never Royal Mizbeach, are Memuat. They're not included in this Lima. The only difference between them is that Rabbi Yossi Haglili learns it from the word Kvasim, and Rabbi Akiva learns it from the closing pasuk of Iya'olah. Okay, so here's a perfect example. We have two G'dolei HaTanoim learning exactly the same halacha, but from two different words in the same parsha. Excuse me? You're again doing the same thing you did before, Rav Papa. The Omer of Adabar Ava, Olata of Psula Ikebenayu. There's a tremendous difference between them. For heaven's sake, if you learn it out of Kvasim. So Kvasim mean some type of behemah. But if I bring an olata oaf that was roy for the Mizbeach, and this particular bird was pasul because of pigle or whatever. So, I mean, I'm not going to allow it to stay on the Mizbeach because it's not like a keves at all. Masha Enkein, if Rabbi Akiva learns it out from ola, it is an ola, it's an olata oaf. What's the nafkamina, what kind of ola it is? So what are you telling me? There's no difference between them? This is not the same halacha, for heaven's sakes. These are opposite halachas. I asked you to give me an example. Man, why can't I get an answer to a simple question? Give me an example of precisely the same halacha that you're deriving from two different words. I don't know what that would mean. Yeah. All right, says Rav Ashi. I'll give it a try. All right. How about this? We have a braita that says, Dam yechashev le'isha hu dam shafach. All right, so this is all part of the amazing halacha of shchute chutz and ha'alat chutz. So remember what it says in the Torah, el petach o mo'ed lo hevio la'akriv korban la'Hashem, lifnei mishkan Hashem, a person who does that, dam yechashev le'ishahu, dam shafach, it's like he's a murderer and he poured out blood. Whoa, what in the world? The guy shechted something outside of the Beis HaMikdash and now he's a murderer. He brought a korban. I don't understand. What is that pasuk talking about? Dam yechashev. Ah, it says, therefore, that pasuk to teach me that even if you were zorek the dam outside of the Beis HaMikdash. You're Zorek the Dam on what? You built a Mizbeach, whatever, and you're Zorek the Dam on it. Outside of the Mizbeach that's in the Beis HaMikdash, you would be Chayiv Kores. And if you did such a thing thinking it was Mutter, so then, this is, of course, is what people do on the Bamot, right? So you think only the Halah, you're Chayiv for on a Bama. You think that only the Shechita you're Chayiv for in Shechita Schutz. No. Even if you're another guy, you didn't do the Shechita part, and you didn't do the Akrava of the Karban, you're a different guy, you poured out the Dam. You're going to have to bring a Karban for the Shogeg of pouring out the Dam, and if you're the same guy, you have to bring two Karbanas, one of them for pouring out Dam, and the other one for Shechting Bechutz, and so on. So that is coming to tell me you'd be Mechuyev. Fantastic Kiddush, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva says, that's not where I know it from. I know it from the Pasuk that stresses, there where we're talking about the actual Hakrovas Chutz. So it says over there, V'aleihem tomar, Ish ish mi Beit Yisrael u'min ager asher yagur betocham asher ya'ale ola ozavach. What's this ola ozavach? What I have to throw in ozavach? It says if you bring a carbon outside of Beis HaMikdash, what's that zavach? Ah, that is coming to be marbe lirabotet hazorek. That if you were zorek, the dam on a mizbeach that was outside of the Beis HaMikdash, classic case of bona, you would be chayev. Now, says Rav Ashi. Okay, bottom line is we've got two shitas over here saying exactly the same thing. Tarvayu Maika Marabu, both Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva are bringing a raya that for Zrikas Hadam, you are Chayev Kores, and therefore would have to bring a Korban Chatas if you did it Peshogeg. The only difference between them is that Rabbi Yishmael learns it from Dam Yecha Shev, and Mar Maisalami Dam Yecha Shev, and Rabbi Akiva was learning it from a different word, Ozavach. Great example. Lousy example. Oh, my Rabbi Avol, there's a tremendous difference between them. The difference is Shachat Vizarak. Suppose you did the Shechita and you did the Zrika. So now the question is, are you Chayev separate Karbonas for the Shechita and the Zrika? So according to Rabbi Yishmael, the entire Limud was brought from the idea of specifically Dam Yechashev. But that would be in the same context as Shechita, which is what that pasuk is referring to. If you shechted it bachutz, and we're learning from the extra word Dam Yechashev, or if you were Zarek et mi bachutz, okay, so how many chataot do you bring if you did both of those things? One. Because the din of Zrika was a subcategory of the halakha of Shechita. Don't think only if you spilled blood, so to speak, by doing the Shechita, you're Chayev. But even if you were just Zorek the Dam, you're Chayev. And if I did both, so I'm still only have one lav, so I can't be Mechayev you on two separate Chataot, can I? I could be over this lav through Zrika, and I could be over this lav through Shechita. But it would be exactly the same. So according to that, L'divrei Rabbi Yishmael, you'd only bring one chatas. Masha Enkin, according to Rabbi Akiva, you would bring two chataot, because it's two completely different lavim. One was from the lav that was actually talking about halah. So if I did the halah, then you're right. I would have on the one hand the halah, and on the other hand the zrika. So, but according to Rabbi Akiva, if I did the Shechita and I also did the Zrika, so I would, in that case, be chayav two separate things. That's from two separate places. I'm not learning it from the Shechita. I'm learning it from the Halah. So it's as if I did the Shechita, which is one lav, and I did the Halah, which is another lav. So it's a tremendous difference between these two Shechitas. I am asking you now for the fourth time to bring me a case where there's no difference between the limud and they're trying to say the same subtle limud from two different words, and I still have not gotten one example of where that would be the case. Says the Gemara, no, this is a good example. You're wrong. This is a good example because Itmar Allah, we know that Abaya explained that af l'divei Rabbi Akiva nami eno chayev al ha'achas, because the pasuk puts the two together to explain to us that it's a single azara, you'd only be chayev once. Why? Because even according to Rabbi Akiva, the pasuk went out of its way elsewhere to say, Shom ta'ale olotecha v'shom ta'ase. So over there, the pasuk says, only in the mokom, kim b'mokom asher yivchar Hashem bechad shifatecha, shom ta'ale olotecha v'shom ta'ase. What's the connection between the asiya? What it means is, all and every aveda and asiya is included in the shom ta'ale, which means arvinu rachmana lekulu asiyot, everything, that this is the azhara, the Torah is telling you whatever the two azharas were, one of them being yishar melecha ben ta'ale olotecha b'chol makom asher tireh, and the other one being ki'im b'makom asher yivchar Hashem elokecha shom ta'ale v'shom ta'aseh, it's telling me that the shom ta'ale v'shom ta'aseh is included in the iser of Hishamer Lecha, which is the marker of the lav, of Pentale Olotecha B'chol Makom, even if the remez to it may be in the context of the Shechita. So that's telling me that Afilu Aliba Rabbi Akiva, the Torah has made it very clear that the differences between the Chiyav of Kores, which means the Chiyav of the Korban, is based on the lav. And here the Torah is telling me it's one lav of Hishamer Lecha, and therefore, you would only be bringing one chata. So now, it turns out, there is no difference, la halacha, between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva. And that gives us a beautiful example of a case where, despite all of the apparent differences, the Torah, in the end, makes it clear that those differences are irrelevant. And therefore, we now know that either one of these psukim, either it was Rabbi Akiva's pasuk, or it was Rabbi Shmuel's pasuk, but they can't both have been coming to tell me the same thing. That is a point. Okay, moving on in our Mishnah. So the dine mamonot have to be done in the daytime, and you can finish the din v'goyimrim b'layla. But when it comes to the dine nefashos, you cannot complete a din nefashos in the nighttime. Or how do we know that? Omre b'chia bar papa. So this idea that you can finish even in the night if it's mominous, it says in the pasuk when Yitro was making his suggestion about what to do. So we said over there v'shavtu et ha'am b'chol eit. Why does it say at all times b'chol eit? I mean, what time would be excluded? Ah, so it's Gufa coming to tell me that 24 hours a day, the courtroom is open and the dinim go on 24 hours a day. Oh, so then why can't you start a din at 2 o'clock in the morning? I mean, after all the Hasidic Rebbes, they like to have the people come in, you know, 2 o'clock. You have an appointment for 2:27 in the morning, you know. Poor guy's got to wait till 2:27 in the morning till he goes in. Not to mention the poor Rebbe. But anyway, so why can't I do that also in terms of a Bezdin? So Tchilas Din Nami, let me walk into court at 2:30 in the morning to begin the din. Ah, that's because of Rava. Rava pointed out that the Pashtus is we've got a contradiction in the Psak. Rava Rami, K'tiv v'shaftu et ha'am b'chol eit, like you just said from Yitro. But then we have a completely different pasuk for him that talks about ve'aya biyom hanchilo et banav, which is mashma that if he is coming to have some kind of court case, which is called mishpat hanchilo et banav, and that says only in the daytime. So what else could it mean? I mean, it certainly doesn't mean people only die in the daytime. So harketzah. How do we understand that the chol eight is not a contradiction to the bayom? Yom is beginning. So yom is the tchila of the din. Laila b'chol eight is available for concluding a din, but only if it had started at the proper time, which was during the day. But that would mean does it not, that the mission's not like Rebbe Meir? The Tanya Rebbe Meir said in a Braita that Oyer Rebbe Meir Omer, Ma Tabud Lomara Al Pihem Ye Kol Riv V'Chol Nega. So what does it mean when it talks about the Kanim Asheru Bayamimahim, that everything that they say, Binogea arguments, meaning Bezdin's disputes, and Negoyim. Now, what in the world, Negoyim? Negoyim aren't something that come to court. Why in the world would the Torah have put together Rivim in a courtroom, which needs education, and Negoyim, which just needs the Kohen to say what the din is? Tamayinyan Rivim etzu Negoyim. Ah, we have over here a brilliant Hekesh, Makish Rivim Negoyim. Just like Negoyim, we know can only be seen during the daytime. How do we know that? Because it says, Uvayom Heiraot Bo, when we're talking about the Re'ia, it says it has to be in the daytime. So, look, you can't argue with a Hekesh. So if it's telling me the Negoyim are Biyom, then the Revim have to be Biyom. Furthermore, if a Kohen is blind in one eye, so he's unable to be Re'ia Negoyim, even though he says, I can see perfectly well, but the Pasuk says, L'chol mar'eh enei ha-kohen. You need to have full vision, and if you don't have full vision, you, as a Kohen, cannot actually paskin the din of Negoyim. So that, remarkably, you can't argue with the Hekesh. The Hekesh is telling me, if you are a judge, you cannot be a judge if you are blind even in one eye. You would be puzzled. No, it's the L'chol Mare. So therefore, we now know that this Braita is certainly not going to be like our Mishnah. Because, I mean, in our Mishnah it says that you can give a psak in the nighttime, but the nighttime is not the time that you can give a psak, meaning an opinion about Saras. You cannot be Roya Negoyim Balayla. So therefore, you cannot be Pesik Adin Balayla. All right. So that's not like Rebbe Meir. I mean, let's finish the bright already. Once we talked about the comparisons of Nega to Din, Makish Negoyim L'Rivim. It also works in the other direction. Just like if you're going to court, you cannot go to a Karov. So to Negoyim, you can't have a Karov see a Nega. And the same idea of somebody who's puzzled for Edus would not be able to be a Kohen that looks at your Nega. So wait a minute, why don't we go all the way and say, just like the court case has to be heard by three judges, af negoyim b'shlosha, I mean, it is not a kavach omer, if something that is only going to end up costing you 10 cents, and it's just a matter of money, if nonetheless we need three judges for 10 cents, gufa lo kol shekein, something that's going to be affecting your body and you're going to be put into isolation and you're going to have to do all those things that the Bitzura has to do. My God, don't we need at least the seriousness of the 10 cents? No. Talmud lomar, vuval aron ha-kohen o el echad mi banav ha-kohanim. Olamadata afilu kohen echad ro'eh et ha-negaim. Now, we just learned that if somebody is blind, he cannot be a Dayan. But there was a blind man in Rabbi Yochanan's neighborhood, David Doin Dina. He used to always paskin the dinim, and Rabbi Yochanan never said a word to him, and he was blind in one eye, of course, is what we learned out from over there, if he would have been blind in two eyes. So then everybody was made that he's not to be a Dayan. So how did Rabbi Yochanan allow him? Because Rabbi Yochanan said, Alokhis Tistam Mishnah, and we know that the Mishnah says, Kol HaKosher Ladun Kosher La'id. V'yesh Kosher La'id, V'eino Kosher Ladun. So Rabbi Yochanan himself explained what that Mishnah is referring to. That's coming to tell me that there are some people who are good for Edus. A man is blind in one eye. Can he still testify? Yes. There's no din that you have to have full vision with your three-dimensional vision. So he testifies that he saw something that doesn't require three-dimensional vision. Now, that's coming to say there are people that are kosher to give testimony. Who is that, says Rabbi Yochanan? Someone who's blind in one eye. that it's not kosher to be a dayan. So Rabbi Yochanan himself is the one who said that this neighbor of his, who was blind in one eye, is not kosher to be a dayan. So how in the world did he allow this to go on right there in his own neighborhood? Yes, because Rabbi Yochanan did not paskin like this Mishnah. What? But I thought Rabbi Yochanan always paskins like the Stam Mishnah. Indeed, he does. But in this case, he found another Stam Mishnah that says the opposite. And that is our Mishnah. Ha! How do you like that? Because since our Mishnah, as we just showed, is against Rabbi Meir, and it says, Dine Mominis, you're done in Bayom, and you're Gomrim Balaila, where you do not see with your both eyes, so to speak. So then, of course, it's going to allow a person who is Suma Bayanachas to be a judge, because here it says even if it's dark night, you can still go ahead and paskin the din. So Rabbi Yochanan decided according to our Mishnah. And I mean, how do you choose one Stam Mishnah above another Stam Mishnah? You're telling me Rabbi Yochanan likes our Mishnah better. Why would he like our Mishnah better? Umay ume da haistama mi haistama? I mean, that Mishnah over there was from Nida. They were both Stam Mishnayas. Well, there's obviously a difference, isn't there? I mean, one is, Ibai's Ema, Stama derabim adif. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir, but it is like the Rabbana. The Mishnah in Nida that we were talking about was Stama to Rabbi Meir. If you've got a choice between a Stam Mishnah that is in the Shita of a Rabbim and a Stam Mishnah that's in the Shita of a Yochid against those Rabbim, so there Rabbi Yochanan says, okay, so you're back to the normal din that you prefer the Rabbim as opposed to the Yochid. The Stam Mishnah is irrelevant. Or maybe it is the Stam Mishnah precisely. And the reason that our Stam Mishnah is his basis is Mishum Diktani La Rabbi Hilchata de Dina. Mesechet Sanhedrin is to teach me the dinim of Sanhedrin. Nida is not. And therefore, if I'm looking for a psak, I would look for the way Rebbe wrote his Stam Mishnayas in Sanhedrin in order to understand the dinim of Sanhedrin. Why would I take a Stam Mishnah in Nida to teach me the dinim in Sanhedrin? The Mishnah in Nida, the only reason that Rebbe wrote it as a Stama, which was going according to Rebbe Meir, is because that Mishnah was going through a lot of different dinim, where we said, something that is kosher for this is possible for that, but kosher for that is possible for this. So this worked out. I could add Rabbi Meir. I couldn't say that according to Rabbanan, as Rabbi Yochanan pointed out, but according to Rabbi Meir, I added this to the list of those things. So it's a beautiful example. He's kosher for Edus, and he's possible for Dayanus. I mean, not that I hold that that's true, Rabbi would be saying, but it's a nice example. Mashenkin, over here, we're talking about the dinim of the Sanhedrin. I can't play games. I'm telling you what the halacha is. And therefore, the psak over here would be Aliba the Stam Mishnah, which is where Rebbe actually ended up paskening. But now the interesting thing is that we had a pasuk in which we said the B'chol Eit teaches me you can always finish the din at night. But Rabbi Meir says you can't. So how does he understand that pasuk? According to Rabbi Meir, what was the meaning of the pasuk in Yisrael? V'shaftu et ha'am b'chol eit, my darish be. What does he learn from b'chol eit? Omar Rava, b'chol eit comes to include a cloudy day. Because if it wouldn't be for the chol eit, I wouldn't be able to open up a courtroom on a cloudy day either. D'tnan, we know that the Mishnah and the Goyim, remember that the whole basis over here is the hekesh between Negoyim and Rivim, right? And if I can't do Negoyim on a cloudy day, then I shouldn't be able to do Rivim on a cloudy day. And it says there in the Mishnah, in Negoyim, Ein ro'im et ha-Negoyim shacharit u'ben ha-arbayim. You cannot look at these Negoyim in the early morning or in the evening or inside of a house where you don't have the sunshine. V'lo b'yom ha-ma'unan, whoa, or even on a cloudy day. The reason is because the contrast is different. We need to have a standardized contrast. And the reason is that a keha near eight azan, all of these cases, even if you've got a spot that if you would have seen it in full light, it wouldn't have seemed all that bright that it would be included in a baheret azah. And here you're going to mistake it for a Be'eret Hazah because it shines out so much against the dull background. But you can't even look at them in the middle of the afternoon either, because you've got so much light that's being reflected in all around that even a Be'eret Hazah may look as if it's keha because the bright sun is out there in your eyes. So according to Rabbi Meir, if we're going to have Tzorat being the mocker of Rivim, so then how do I know that I'm allowed to open up a courtroom on a cloudy day? Therefore comes along the pasuk to say, Bechol Eit, that Ad Kedei Kach, we're not going to be makpid in the courtroom. So that explains how Rabbi Meir deals with the extra pasuk of Bechol Eit. And according to the Chachamim, they say you are allowed to actually be gomer the din at night. So they had the pasuk that said, B'yom Anchiloed Banav, they needed a pasuk to tell me that you have to start the din in the daytime. But Rabbi Meir doesn't need that pasuk because Rabbi Meir compares Negaim and Rivim. So of course you have to start it during the day because you can't see Negaim in the nighttime. So what does he need the pasuk of B'yom Anchiloed Banav? My Avidle, why does the pasuk mention Bayom Anchiloed Banav at all? That, remember, we had this in Baba Batra. That teaches me the din of Rabba Bar Chanina. And it's Tani Rabba Bar Chanina Kamedir Ibn Nachman. There was this braita that Rabba Bar Chanina was bringing, and he said it in front of Ibn Nachman. Vahaya Bayom Anchiloed Banav. What this means, says the braita, is Bayom Ata Mapil Nachalot V'I Ata Mapil Nachalot Balayla. You cannot make a din of Yerusha, to pass a Yerusha to children in the nighttime. Abaya was there and he said, what are you talking about? Somebody who dies in the day, he is able to pass on his property to his children, but if he dies in the night, then there's no inheritance? That's the craziest thing I ever heard. What is this brayta supposed to be saying? Manda shachir b'yamama yirtin le'bane, and manda shachir b'layla lo yirtin le'bane. Maybe you should have said it somewhat differently, says Abaya there to Rabba Bar Chanina. Dilma din nachalot ka'amret. Maybe what you were saying is that if a person is dying during the day, and as a shchiv merah, he gives over his last will and testament, then during the day, there's no further need for anything in the best. And that would make sense, because it says in the Braita, this was at the end of the entire parsha that we had about the Benot Zlofchad and so on. So it calls it a chukat mishpat. The Braita says this means that there's one bottom line. Ur'a kol ha-parasha kula lihiyot din. This teaches us that the bottom line is people who are present and hear whatever it is that the dying individual gave as his last will and testament, that is the final judgment on this issue. And that would mean, in practical terms, the Amar of Yehuda Amarav, you have three people that came in to see how someone was doing, and they find out that he's doing very not well, he's dying. And they were Nichmasu, Levakeret HaCholeh, and they hear him give over his last will and testament. If they want to, they can write this down as a shtar, which would mean that they sign their names as witnessed by, and they sign their names as witnesses, or they cannot do more than that if they were two. But if they're three, or they can actually sit down, make themselves a bezdin, and issue an order of their being the executors. And they say, according to this last will and testament, we do hereby grant this to son X and this to son Y, and that settles the matter once and for all. So this is basically what that braita was pointing out, what Rav was saying. If there were only two people that were coming in to visit, and they were all not three people, they don't have that option. They can only be kotvim, it's sign on as witnesses. We witnessed the last will and testament of so-and-so, and here it is, and they sign. But they can't be the executors, because they're not a bezdin. The Omer of Chista, and here's the crucial point, says Rav Chista, this whole business about three people coming in, being able to be the executors, that was only if it was during the daytime that they had come in. But if they were there at night, even if they are three people, since it says Ur'ah kol ha'parasha kula lio din, it has to be treated like all din. And din is only b'yom and not b'layla. And therefore, there is no way that even afterwards they would be able to be a court, because since they now were only edim at the time that they heard it, ein ed na'aseh dayan, and therefore, if they couldn't be the dayan then, they cannot be a dayan later. We need to have a new court that's going to act on the document that they write up as a shtar of a dayitake. But they are not the ones that are going to be able to give it to the people that are mentioned. So the question that he was asking was that if Rabba Bar Chanina, maybe what you meant when you said that you don't give an achla at night, what you meant is that if you were there and you were present as part of three people, you don't give the achla at night as a bezdin, because at that point you are only edim. That would make sense if that's what your brayta meant. Omar le, said Rabba Bar Chanina to Abaye, of course that's what I meant. In Hochika Amina, that's exactly what I was saying, was precisely the way you brilliantly understood it. All right, Rabotai, and I look forward to Bezrat Hashem being able to continue tomorrow. Meanwhile, we should be zocha to Besorot Tovot and to understand ultimately how all things end up L'Tovah and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greater Geula V'Kavod.